And get started.
This call is being recorded.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for joining. Welcome to World Vision's Advocacy Conference call, specifically focused this month on the topic of trafficking. We're so grateful that each of you have taken the time out of your busy days to, especially in the summer, to be with us. We know that's not easy to do, and we're really thankful for all of you who could be with us. Just a couple housekeeping things before I jump in. My name is Amanda Moots, and I am with World Vision's Advocacy Campaigns and Integrations team. We're based out of World Vision's Seattle office, and I'm joined today by some colleagues actually on the other side of the country, both in New York and Washington, D.C., and we've got a good agenda lined up for you today. I think most of you already are managing this, but just wanted to flag you this. We do allow for verbal dialogue on this call. We don't just want to talk at you. We want to talk with you. And so because of that, we can't put you on mute, but we do ask that you put yourselves on mute to help with feedback and just the sound quality overall. So thanks to those of you who've already done that. But just wanted to share a quick friendly reminder at the top of the call. If you're traveling, if you're driving in your car, whatever you're doing, if your dog is barking in the background, we just appreciate it if you can put yourself on mute. And then there will be a couple scheduled times in our agenda for you to unmute yourself if you have any questions for us or comments that you want to share throughout the call. So stay tuned for that. Also, I know a lot of you guys are joining on your computer, and we are glad that you can do that. Those of you have, just because it will allow you to see some PowerPoint slides and some visuals. If you're on the computer, you're also able to send questions or comments at any point throughout the call in our chat box. So we just wanted to alert you and make sure you saw that functionality and just let you know we are going to be checking the chat box throughout the call, so feel free to post your questions or comments there. Well, we've come together today to, you know, our advocacy team here at World Vision, we hold conference calls, at least we try to do them about quarterly, just to connect with World Vision donors and advocates on various issues, to give you an update from Capitol Hill. And this particular call, as many of you I think already know, is focused on this issue of human trafficking, which I know is an area of passion for a lot of you. And many of you on this call, I'm personally familiar with, you know, that you engage locally in your communities or, you know, help with efforts to fight human trafficking, even domestically as well as internationally. So we're excited that we can look at this issue from maybe a slightly different angle, but that is a really critical one, and that's the issue of, you know, U.S. law and kind of the systemic side of this really unfortunate issue that we have in our world. World Vision in particular, I think as many of you are aware, our expertise really lies in the area of prevention and specifically preventing human trafficking internationally. So there are other really great organizations out there who, you know, tend to be involved with some of the rescue operations and prosecution, which all serve a critical role too. But World Vision really places a lot of value and our expertise is in this area of prevention. And so on this call, we're going to talk today about why prevention is so important in this equation. We're going to share a little bit of evidence and examples with you about what is working from our vantage point and why World Vision really wants the U.S. government to invest in those types of solutions. We really view the U.S. government as a partner in this. And so to speak about this subject, later on I'm going to introduce you to Rahsaan Graham, who's our Senior Director here at World Vision for Child Protection and Education. And we're also going to hear from Jessica Busquette, who is our Policy Advisor for Child Protection, along with a few others who I'll introduce later on. So we're really excited that they could be with us today. You know, many on this call might be more familiar with how World Vision implements our preventative community-based programs around the world that protect vulnerable children. But specifically today, we want to update you on some critical legislation that the U.S. government reauthorizes every 3 years that really serves as the cornerstone of federal human trafficking legislation. It's called the Trafficking Victims Protection Act that I know many of you are familiar with. It needs to be reauthorized again this year, and so we want to talk with you on this call about what it does, about why World Vision supports it, and why we really need you on this call to talk with your members of Congress about it this summer. And so Jessica is going to be talking a little bit about that later on. Before we dive into those things and into that main topic of trafficking for this call, we did want to also give you all a brief update about some other issues that World Vision is monitoring and engaging Congress and the administration on that also impact the well-being of children around the world. So I know some of you are familiar with this. You advocate with us on a regular basis, but I think we might have some, you know, if you're new to World Vision's advocacy work, we like to use these calls to give you an update on kind of the broader scope of issues that we're monitoring and engaging, you know, in Washington, D.C. and around the country. So the first and probably the biggest one that's, you know, kind of the important update is really on the foreign affairs budget. This is, you know, something that we've been advocating for the last many months. Basically, back in March, the administration proposed about a 40% cut to foreign assistance funding, which is the U.S. government's primary block of money that goes toward helping alleviate global poverty through through programs, many of which, you know, World Vision implements. And we've been really encouraged by our advocates' response. World Vision donors and advocates have really been engaging through emails and calls to their members of Congress, just expressing support for this funding. Also, in-person meetings and social media. Just in June alone, the community as a whole, you know, in partnership that we work with other organizations, we've taken about 170,000 actions just in the month of June. So that's really something to celebrate and be proud of. World Vision has been a main contributor to the scale of our reach. Then in May, just not that long ago, the administration came out with a bit of a revised proposal, and that 40% proposed cut actually had decreased to about 30%, so we were celebrating, you know, some positive movement in the right direction on that. And really right now, all eyes are on Congress, who is currently in the process of determining the final spending levels for FY18, basically through some committee processes. Both the House and the Senate Appropriations Committees are meeting, and they get to kind of determine the final spending levels for the different foreign assistance accounts. I wanted to update some of you guys that, you know, just last week, the House subcommittee that sets the majority of foreign assistance funding levels released their projected numbers. And for FY18, and we're looking at about a 10% cut. So we've made a lot of progress from the administration's original 40% proposal, but we're still facing a likely 10% cut. Tomorrow, the full Appropriations Committee in the House is meeting to do what they call the bill markup and to kind of finalize some of those numbers. And so for those of you, if you know who your House representative is, if you don't, you can go to house.gov and put in your zip code and find out. But if you go to your House representative's website, you can usually quickly find out if what committees they sit on. And particularly if your member sits on the House Appropriations Committee, I want to encourage you guys and ask you today even to call their office and just simply, you know, quickly say, they'll, you know, say who you are, where you're from, and just ask them to protect foreign assistance from cuts in the committee hearing tomorrow. So it's really critical that they hear from us at this time. We're looking, you know, at the schedule ahead. It's possible that the House may pass their full federal budget before they go to recess in August, but we're definitely hearing the Senate will likely not move on their bill till September. So we do have a few months as we look ahead to still try to really influence these critical decisions around foreign assistance funding, and want to encourage you guys to keep at it. So that's basically it. Most of you, I think, are aware that this is less than 1% of our entire federal budget. So it's a really tiny portion of what our U.S. government spends, but we know that it saves millions of lives, and it's mostly implemented through nonprofits like World Vision, who have the expertise on the ground to put it to good use in communities. So we've seen it make an impact. We know it has an impact. And as people of faith, we really want to continue to call our leaders to use their responsibility and their power for the good of all, including the vulnerable and the weak. So that's the update on the foreign assistance situation as we're monitoring it. Wanted to update you as well about another bill that many of you have advocated for over the last couple of years called the Reach Every Mother and Child Act. We are still awaiting reintroduction of that bill in this congressional session. So unfortunately, there's not been a lot of movement on that. Members of Congress involved with was sponsoring that bill are working on language changes. We're hearing that we might have the Senate bill in time for August, the August recess, but it's looking right now like the House version is not likely. And then as we, right before we transition to our main topic of trafficking, we did want to highlight for you just the current situation happening in East Africa and the Middle East with the food crisis. Many of you might be aware of the famine that was declared in South Sudan and kind of just the countries in the surrounding area that are really being affected by this situation. And so we've invited Beth Ann Sirocco, who is our World Vision Policy Advisor for Food Security and Livelihoods, just to join us for a few minutes today to give you an update specifically on what the U.S. government has been doing in terms of a response to this crisis, why we see them as a really critical partner in our own response, and what's likely ahead in the next few months for this growing humanitarian crisis. So, Beth Ann, if you're on the line, we'd love to have a quick update from you on East Africa.
Thanks, Amanda, and thanks for inviting me to join the call today and talk about this issue. It's somewhat been hidden from the headlines, which is quite surprising given that it's affecting nearly 25.5 million people who are in need of humanitarian assistance in Ethiopia and Kenya, Somalia, and South Sudan. And I just think it's important when we throw those numbers out to put it into perspective. So that number is larger than the populations of New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, and Philadelphia combined. So it's affecting a massive number of people in East Africa. And important to note, when we talk about hunger, conflict and instability actually create a tipping point from hunger into famine, as we've begun to see in South Sudan. And in South Sudan alone, famine, as Amanda noted, was declared in the country in February. And it has eased in the last month or so, but we have had to significantly scale up the humanitarian response. And so that is a tiny bit of a silver lining that as a result of the U.S. leading and other governments, we've started to be able to reverse the famine, but there is still incredible need in South Sudan. And recently, World Vision CEO Rich Stearns traveled to the region to northern Kenya, which is just near the border of South Sudan. And he was very shocked by the sheer number of people in need. And he said, and this is a direct quote, "In my 19 years as the head of World Vision, this is some of the toughest stuff I've had to see. The animals died first because there was no pasture land or water. And once the animals die, people die next." I think this is where support from the American public is really critical. And our leadership as a country counts, and it helps to leverage action from many other governments and multilateral organizations around the world. And I think it's essential that not only governments respond, but also individuals like yourselves who open your hearts and donate, as well as lift your voices and advocate, like many of you are doing today on this call. And over the past several months, we as advocates have made important strides in addressing this East Africa hunger crisis. Last fiscal year, we were able to secure an additional, wait for it, $990 million in famine relief from the U.S. Congress. You just heard of Amanda speak to how difficult the current budget climate is, but because we were able to mobilize and speak with one voice across many different organizations, we were able to influence our elected officials to provide almost $1 billion of extra funding to respond to these crises. But we have to do more. Current estimates by the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs is slating that there's a need around $4.9 billion to address urgent needs in the four famine areas, which include South Sudan and Somalia, but Nigeria and Yemen as well. Last month, World Vision Senior Vice President Margaret Schuller, she was actually invited to testify before Congress. This was a really unique opportunity, and World Vision was the only NGO to testify. And she called on our elected officials to continue to support funding for important food assistance programs known as the Food for Peace Program and the McGovern-Dole Food for Education Program. These programs not only provide the emergency food aid like you might see in South Sudan where they're doing airdrops from airplanes, but it also provides funding for long-term programs that create more resilient communities that can withstand droughts and shocks. And so today, we really need to continue to join with people like Margaret and ask Congress and the White House to continue to respond to the food crisis in East Africa, which is being called one of the worst humanitarian crises since World War II. So just in conclusion, we do know that our elected officials listen to our voices, which we saw last fiscal year with that additional $990 million. And it's just really important that we can continue to lift up our voices for the people of East Africa and the many other vulnerable communities around the world where World Vision works every day. So thank you in advance for taking the time to do so and advocate in the weeks ahead.
Thanks, Beth Ann. Appreciate that update. I hope everyone on the call appreciates it as well. World Vision really sees these issues like maternal and child health or the foreign affairs budget or issues like the, you know, a hunger crisis happening in an entire region of a continent. Those things are, for us, very much related, even to issues of trafficking, because they all, at their root, I think, create vulnerability in communities. And World Vision really, you know, sees the need to address that vulnerability in a holistic way. Oftentimes in these humanitarian crises contexts, you know, the vulnerability of children, it goes up. You know, children become more susceptible when families are displaced and on the move and desperate for work and for food. Children are often put in harm's way you know, made more vulnerable to exploitation in those situations. And so we wanted to make sure we gave you an update on that, you know, on this hunger crisis in particular, just because we're praying, honestly, that there would be an uptick in the media, that the American public would see more about what's going on. But we suspect some of you have seen some of the appeals coming from World Vision for financial help. But we wanted you to also know how we were engaging the U.S. government and really working with them as a partner, because, I mean, we end up implementing quite a lot of that U.S. food aid. It helps us reach more families and more children. So thanks for that update, Beth Ann. I'm excited to now turn it over to Rahsaan Graham, who has been with World Vision since 2002. And like I mentioned earlier, he's our Senior Director for Child Protection and Education. And really, for the past 5 years, has been directing the management of our privately funded portfolio for international work that centers around children who are vulnerable to exploitation and violence, and those without access to quality schooling as well. And so, Rahsaan, I'd love to pass it over to you for you to kind of share a little bit about how World Vision approaches the protection of children in our communities, what strategies have been most effective, and to share some examples and evidence of how we've been implementing that.
Great. Thank you, Amanda. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay,
yeah,
if you want to hold that slide, just keep it off that slide for now, because I'm not going to touch on it until later, and so it won't be a distraction. Hello, everybody, and you teed it up perfectly, Amanda. You know, you talk about the different vulnerabilities that children face. In any country, if you were to go to the most vulnerable children in those countries, you're most likely going to find a child protection theme at play. And so maybe I decided in my short time that I have is just to give you a look at how World Vision does child protection, and maybe even just start out with the definition of child protection. So the way that we define that World Vision and other organizations' definitions are very similar is child protection is any and all measures that we take to prevent or respond to any form of violence, abuse, exploitation, or neglect facing children. And so it's really, how does World Vision respond to the bad things that are happening to children around the world? And those, as I mentioned, are very different in different places. Specifically, the sex and labor trafficking is one that we are addressing in several countries. The last estimate that we got from the World Labor Organization was that sex and labor trafficking is a $30 billion industry, second only to the drug trade. And so it's clear that the exploitation of children in this industry, there are dollars to be made, but it is the place where World Vision is combating this evil of exploitation, greed, corruption. And so if you go to the next slide, I do want to show you how World Vision approaches child protection, whether it's child sacrifice in Uganda or whether it's early marriage in Kenya or whether it's trafficking happening in Southeast Asia or in Bangladesh or in India. We have a certain approach to it, and it really is a system strengthening approach, but we do so by strengthening the different actors, if you will, in that system. If you look at this infographic here, really we start at the top with empowering children. World Vision feels because we're working in communities, in relationship with children and families, one of the most important things we can do is empower children to protect themselves and to help protect one another. As a parent of two daughters in New York City, I know that when my daughter leaves the house, I have to have told her how to protect herself when she leaves the house and gets on the train, right? And so really empowering children is the first thing that we do. The next ring of really protection from a prevention perspective is looking at the strengthening of families and caregivers. Again, my wife and I are the ones that are responsible for equipping my children with being protected. And we need to make sure that we have access to and education about all of those things that are necessary for us to be strong caregivers to protect our children. So whether that's in a developing country, whether that's generating income generating activities so that children families have what they need and they're not needing to make tough decisions about their children working, or whether it's just education and access to the services. Strengthening families is a key intervention for World Vision's work, no matter where we're doing child protection work. A third one is this mobilizing of faith communities. UNICEF did a paper several years back, and they talked about the importance of faith communities, be it Christian or Muslim, really, in protecting children. A lot of that is because of the fact that faith communities in any given country, in any given context, do have kind of a community following. They're looked up to, and those faith leaders are looked up to. So how do we mobilize faith communities to challenge thoughts, to challenge attitudes and behaviors around how a community treats its children, and in many places, looking at it through the lens of the Bible or even the Quran. And so mobilizing faith communities to protect children by changing thoughts, attitudes, and behaviors around harmful traditional practices is key for us. And then this final piece is really partnering with communities and influencing governments. So how do we mobilize community duty bearers in the community, whether it be police officers, whether it be the judicial system at a local level, whether it be child protection committees, but then also influencing government, which is what this call is about, really mobilizing those at the grassroots, literally family members and individuals at the grassroots, so that they influence governments, so that the laws and policies that are on the books actually are positively impacting the lives and transforming the lives of individuals at communities. And so if you look across the bottom there in the gray bar, we're really looking for increased awareness, better and equipped parents, and a holistic protective system, all of those informal and formal pieces in a community that come together who have the duty to protect children. How do we strengthen that system? And so this is just a quick and dirty of what World Vision child protection work looks like. If you go to the next slide, I often talk about this from a perspective of why World Vision. There's a lot of organizations that are doing child protection work. I'm sure many of you on the call can name those organizations. And we're really looking at some of the stuff I've touched on. We're community-based. World Vision is in relationship with children and families and community. And so we're able to mobilize our staff in the context of those trusting relationships to really get to some of these interventions that I mentioned on the previous slide. Child focus, that goes without saying, at the core of our work is the focus on the vulnerable children and child well-being. As a Christian organization, we're motivated by our faith to take care of widows and orphans in their time of need and to look after and to serve vulnerable children. And then the specific role that we can play in mobilizing faith communities to protect and develop children. The national to local piece really speaks to this advocacy piece that we're talking about. In many countries that we work in, there are some great laws on the books in the national level. However, when you get down to the community level, those laws and policies are not enforced. They're unfunded mandates often. And so we're really trying to mobilize so that we can, and World Vision has this ability to have this national to local kind of feedback loop to hold governments accountable. And then the global alignment piece, as you've heard, we are globally aligned with a lot of other organizations. The conversation at the UN and the Sustainable Development Goals, and the and the efforts of the U.S. government, World Vision is fully aligned with those things as well. And in closing, let me just shift more specifically to the topic of trafficking. Whether it's in India and Bangladesh, where we're doing child labor projects and knowing that there's labor trafficking happening, or whether it's in even in Central America with a lot of the migration that's happening in and throughout Central America and the trafficking that's happening there, either en route or with the drug cartels or just the sex trafficking that's happening, we know that it's a prevalent theme, and it's probably the worst form of exploitation that we do see in child protection. But today I want to close by talking about a project that we are doing in Cambodia. It comes off of the heels of a $10 million investment in about six countries in what we call the Mekong Delta. So it was Cambodia, Vietnam, Myanmar, I think Thailand, the Philippines, and Laos. And World Vision US has begun a new project there. It's about a $5.6 million project. It's taking place in Cambodia, Vietnam, and Myanmar. And it really is ending violence against children, especially trafficking. It's a three-country project. And it really has several main goals that we're looking at, all based, as Amanda mentioned at the beginning, of preventing these trafficking from happening from children, but then also the ability to also intervene when it does. We're looking at a couple of key expected outcomes from that project. We're hoping and working towards young people having the knowledge and skills to reduce their personal risk to trafficking, as I mentioned. Again, families and caregivers receiving access to adequate and appropriate services. Really working to strengthen communities, including faith communities, to work together to create a protective environment. And then also looking at the systemic barriers addressing the violence against children, and that would obviously include trafficking. So this project is entering its second year of implementation, and we're really excited about it. And it was really one of those projects that will directly benefit from the advocacy work that you all are doing. And so with that, I think my time is up, and I will defer anything else I say to maybe the answering of questions later. Thanks again.
Awesome. Thanks, Rasan. For those of you maybe who joined a little late, I just want to remind you we will have a Q&A time. Jessica's going to go next, and then we'll have some time for you to ask questions. You can always put them in the chat box as well, specifically if you have any comments or questions for Rasan. That was really helpful. Thank you so much, Rasan, for that. And we wanted to offer that to you all as a foundation as we turn now to the topic of the U.S. government and the legislation that we're particularly advocating for right now, because they're not disconnected things. As Rasan was just sharing, we are well-versed now as an organization in these particular types of approaches to the protection of vulnerable children in communities. And we can use that evidence, and we can use the investment of private donors like you to help leverage a greater investment from the U.S. government to really take our impact farther. And so for that, I want to pass the ball now to my colleague Jessica Busquette, who is our policy advisor for child protection, who can talk with you about the Trafficking Victims Protection Act and its reauthorization that is currently moving in Congress and why that's important. So Jessica, over to you.
Great. Thanks, Amanda and Rasan. And Rasan, you already hit on, I think, this great kind of funnel where we have kind of this local to national and to global effort to protect children from violence and exploitation. And so the work that I'm about to talk about, it kind of hits on that. What is the U.S. government's role in protecting children in the U.S. and around the world from specifically trafficking? I'm from the land of acronyms, so I'm going to try really hard not to use any, although there is one on my slides. So if I start speaking in alphabet soup, please just drop it into the chat box and give me a heads up, and I will go back and re-explain. I'm trying to learn to speak in full words. But the TVPRA, or the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act, is the reauthorization of a law that, as Amanda mentioned, originally passed in 2000. And this was landmark legislation. It was landmark because it was really the first big anti-trafficking legislation in the U.S. context. but it was also very comprehensive. It looks at not just the domestic situation and our, you know, how the U.S. is going to respond to trafficking within our own borders, but also how the U.S. would respond in terms of our foreign policy and assistance. And it really kind of focuses around four key themes: prosecution, protection of survivors after a trafficking event, prevention of trafficking, and a few, probably about 6 or 7 years ago, the State Department added partnership, that we're all in this together. We, you know, World Vision, we partner with the U.S. government, we partner with local communities, that we all are together in ending trafficking, and we only do that if we are all working together. And so this legislation has to be reauthorized every 2 to 3 years. So there was a reauthorization in 2003, 2005, 2008, 2013, and we're up again this year. And mostly we do this because the nature of trafficking changes. Traffickers adopt new ways of trafficking people, the situation or what makes people vulnerable changes, and we learn what works and what doesn't work. And so we want the U.S. law to constantly be reflecting what works and what doesn't, so that we are taking the best approaches possible to fighting this crime. And so this is where World Vision steps into the space and says, you know, we are helping end human trafficking and other forms of violence against children around the world, specifically, you know, internationally. And so what have we learned from our programs that might be able to be kind of put into U.S. law to help shape how the U.S. government is addressing this issue? If there was one thing I can say, especially as we talk about kind of the role that advocates will play in the coming months, is that on this law, advocates have always made a big difference. The possibly not terribly clear picture you have here on your screen is one of my favorite letters that I've ever had emailed to me, and it is from a 5-year-old who her mother was advocating on the trafficking bill, and so she found out about what her mom was doing, and she felt very strongly that the then President Obama and her member of Congress needed to also take action on trafficking because she didn't feel like it was fair that children around the world were experiencing this. And there have been several times over the last 10 to 15 years where the voices of advocates have been the reason why a reauthorization has passed. And this was incredibly true last time. It got stuck for multiple years, and it was because of the hard work of advocates and especially, people still tell me, World Vision advocates who were able to move that piece of legislation and convince members of Congress to prioritize it so that it was eventually signed into law. So your voices really do make a difference. And I know that this is an issue that a lot of you are incredibly passionate about. So what are we dealing with this year? In the House of Representatives, we had, and I'll get to that, a bill called the Frederick Douglass Trafficking Victim Prevention and Protection Act, which I know is a bit of a mouthful, but it's a really exciting bill, and the title is exciting to me for several reasons. One, this year would have been Frederick Douglass's 200th birthday, which is why they wanted to make sure that he was honored and his work on the abolition movement in the U.S. was honored through this reauthorization. But also because there is a stronger focus on prevention. It is really easy for, especially when we want results, right? We always want to know how we're doing on fighting human trafficking. And oftentimes that gets quantified in the number of prosecutions and the number of victims who become survivors. And so sometimes the prevention piece, which is a little bit more challenging to quantify, gets lost in that discussion. And yet we know that it is possible to prevent trafficking from happening in the first place. And that's really what we want to get to, is where we're preventing it so that we don't need to have prosecution and protection programs eventually at some point. So the bill definitely has more of a focus on prevention, which I find to be very exciting. And it also has four key things that World Vision either strongly advocated for being included or think that will make a really big difference for children around the world. One of them is it strengthens what's called the Child Soldier Prevention Act, which I should also mention World Vision Advocates helped get passed about 10 years ago, which restricts the U.S. government from providing military assistance to countries we know are using children in their armed forces. This is a form of trafficking. It's a form of it's a worse form of child labor. And yet we still see the U.S. government spend about $1 billion over the last 5 to 6 years on countries we know are using children, military assistance to countries we know who are using children in their armed forces. So this just strengthens that law and tries to make it get to the point where it's being implemented better. The second part is that it recognizes a really key role that an office at the Department of Labor plays in fighting human trafficking. Some of you may have done some advocacy work around the Bureau of International Labor Affairs and their anti-child labor program. This program has faced cuts for the last several years to their grant program. And so this kind of clause is in the bill that says this office is really important to our anti-trafficking fight. I mean, they are making sure that children are protected from exploitation and trafficking, that they're in school, and that their families have access to livelihoods programs is really key, and just kind of helping continue to make that case that this is really critical funding for children. The bill also calls for USAID to develop what they're calling child protection strategies for countries that are kind of listed in the trafficking in persons report that the U.S. government puts together every year as not doing very well on addressing trafficking. Usually it's, you know, they're not, they have a really large prevalence of trafficking and the government isn't doing much or isn't doing enough to address it. And so this is exciting because it opens up opportunities for child protection and the protection of children from trafficking specifically to be put into USAID's strategy at the country level to really prioritize that. So I think that's a really exciting opportunity if this passes to see how different USAID missions in country put that into action. And the last thing is it strengthens that trafficking in persons report. You probably see in the news there's been some discussion over the last several years about certain countries, whether they deserve to be on kind of the tier that says they're doing a good job or the tier that says they're not doing a good job on their anti-trafficking fight. So there's some language in there that's going to hopefully strengthen that report and make sure that what we get in that TIP ranking is really, trafficking in persons ranking is accurate, because oftentimes our offices in the field are using those rankings to assess how well their government is doing, to have dialogues with their government, and to talk about the recommendations that those reports have. So we really want to make sure that those are accurate and effective. Next slide. So we had very exciting news last week in that the House of Representatives actually passed the Frederick Douglass Trafficking Victims Prevention and Protection Act. So they really wanted to make sure this passed. They had prioritized it being passed before August recess, and they did, in fact, get that through, and we were incredibly ecstatic about it. And so now where do we go from here? The Senate, if you remember your schoolhouse rock, still has to pass the bill. So the Senate's going to be a bit more complicated. The Senate had decided that they were going to do several bills that accomplish the same objectives. So right now they actually have two bills. Both of them are just focusing on the domestic part of trafficking and kind of the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization, just the domestic part. So we're still waiting for an international bill, hopeful that we'll have it in the next month or two. But it's just going to be a bit more complicated as all three of those bills move forward and we only have one in the House. They'll have to figure out a way to kind of squish them all together, I guess, for lack of a better word. We really want to see the Senate introduce legislation soon, and we want to see that legislation has some of those really good provisions from the House that we really like and think will really make a big impact on preventing children from being caught up in trafficking or protecting children if something does happen. We want to make sure that those are still in that Senate bill. So we I think Cassie and Amanda will talk a little bit more later about, you know, kind of the next steps in terms of advocacy and what you can be doing to encourage the Senate to move that forward. But I also want to note that we're on a deadline. like I said, the bill has to be reauthorized every 2 to 3 years. The deadline for that reauthorization is the end of September, and they are on recess for all, if not most, of August. So what does this mean? What does it mean if we don't meet the deadline? Basically, it kind of is a big statement that says the U.S. government maybe isn't prioritizing trafficking like we have before. We've had this happen before where we missed the deadline last time around too, and it just doesn't send a very good message to the rest of the world about our priorities in terms of protecting children and other vulnerable people from things like human trafficking. And it just throws into question a lot of kind of the funding, but really it's just a big statement about our priorities. And so we really want to make sure that that statement about who we are as a country is continued, that we really do prioritize the most vulnerable and protecting the most vulnerable from trafficking. So we're on a deadline. I'm feeling confident that that we can move this forward, but I think Amanda and Cassie are going to talk a little bit more about our next steps later.
Great. Thanks so much, Jessica. And we're going to transition now to a quick Q&A period specifically for questions. We'll talk in a little bit about specifically what advocacy can look like. So if you have questions about that, maybe hold those. But if you have any specific questions about for Rahsaan about what he covered, or for Jessica about the legislation or what's happening in Congress, now would be the time to share those. I'm going to go ahead and start us out with a question submitted from Jean in the chat box. And this question is for you, Rahsaan. She asks, can Rahsaan talk more about World Vision's work on preventing child sex trafficking in Asia? What does the awareness and education for the youth and children and also for the parents look like, for example, in Asia specifically?
Sure, so I can touch on that a little bit. So as I mentioned, we've got a couple different goals that we have. And so one of our outcomes is really to see that children and youth are empowered with the skills and the knowledge that they need to reduce their personal risk of trafficking and other related forms of violence. So the way that we do that is oftentimes we'll form youth clubs. And in these youth clubs, youth have the capacity and are going through trainings really about protecting themselves. And so there's these child and youth protection activities that are building their capacity, everything from role plays to projects that they're working on together to simulated advocacy movements and those types of things. And so how do we continue to equip them with the ability to speak truth to power, but then also to have self-protective strategies and to protect one another? One of the other things we also do within that is just this own personal safety skills. You know, everything from what we would call here in the United States a stranger danger to being able to identify the hallmarks of trafficking and trafficking corridors and all those types of things. And another thing that we're doing is we're really helping children to develop vocational training and small business skills. And so for those children and those families who need their children to work, that they're developing the school so that the skills so that they're not in exploitive situations and they're not tempted to go into jobs that would then lead into trafficking. So really equipping them with the right soft skills and technical skills. And then we're also doing some work around with survivors or children who are definitely at risk to make sure that there's some community reintegration that's happening, to make sure that they're removed from harmful situations if, in fact, the trafficking was being perpetrated by somebody that they know. Also looking into legal aid and counseling and economic assistance and those types of things. As it relates to the families and the caregivers themselves, again, it's that increased access to education, increased access to health and to financial support, to income generating activities and community loans and those types of things. And then looking at the social protection for the most vulnerable families. How do we make sure that the social services there in those communities who again, are put there to protect the most vulnerable children, that they are actually being accessed by vulnerable families and that there's kind of wraparound services to protect vulnerable families, specifically the children in those families. Looking at positive parenting skills that keep girls and boys safe from all forms of violence. So we know that if we can make sure that there's not any violence happening in the schools, violence happening in the homes, mm-hmm. that children are more likely to or less likely to be subject to being exploited or being abused or being neglected as well. And so all of that can just in some ways become a slippery slope from just the violence that's happening in the household. So looking at different positive parenting opportunities as well. So those are some of the strategies that we are looking at and employing in the projects in Cambodia, Myanmar, and Vietnam.
Thanks, Rasan. It looks like we have one more question that came through for you, and the question is from Kendra. She's asking if there are any prevention work, if we do any prevention work specifically with refugees. Can you speak to that for a minute?
And there might be others. Jessica might be able to add to this as well. So we do know that in times of instability, that's when children are most susceptible to being exploited. So whether it's a refugee situation like we see in Syria or in South Sudan, northern Kenya, or if it's a situation like Nepal where there's a natural disaster, we know that one of the first things as an organization we need to do is to protect children, because during the midst of that transition, that's when children can be exploited. One of the things we are doing, and you'll notice it in the structure of this project, is we're not relegating our projects to just one country. We know that obviously trafficking crosses borders. And so in a specific region, we know that we need to have work on both sides of a border so that we can work with repatriation, so that we can have World Vision intervention happening on both sides. But to your point, yes, anytime there's vulnerability, whether because there's more access to vulnerable children who may or may not be watched all the time, or because there is more of an opportunity for parents or caregivers or adults to want to exploit children for money. Those are two places where we'll often see that. We don't specifically have any anti-trafficking work happening in our refugee work because we're not doing any, my team is not doing any project work there. But anytime there is instability, there needs to be careful attention paid to vulnerable children.
Thanks, Rasan. Yeah, and that speaks to the earlier point as well of just how we World Vision really sees all of these issues that we advocate for and engage the U.S. government on as interconnected and together, help support the holistic protection of children. So thanks so much. I'm going to actually go ahead and keep us moving. If those of you on the phones had some questions, feel free, if you're able to send them on the chat box, that would be great, and we can make sure to address those in a follow-up email or at the end of the call if we have time. Otherwise, we'll be sharing. There will be a follow-up email coming with the recording of this call. We'll be sure to include contact information for us in that email. So if those of you on the phone had some questions that we're not able to answer right now, you will definitely have a chance to email those to us, and we'll be sure to get you answers. So I just want to say for right now, thanks to Rasan and Jessica for that helpful overview and the introduction to our work and the U.S. government piece. Thanks, you guys. So with the rest of our time, we are going to just talk briefly about what you all can do with this information. Hopefully you found it helpful in and of itself, but as this is an advocacy call, we think that it should hopefully inform actions that you can now take in support as many of you continue to be engaged around this issue. This issue, the TVPRA, as well as our government's federal budget that I mentioned at the top of the call, it really does impact, it directly impacts World Vision's work. The budget obviously impacts, the scale of the communities we can impact, and the legislation itself actually ensures that funding is implemented in a strategic way with the U.S. government. And so, World Vision as an organization, we can influence our U.S. leaders, we can influence Congress. As has been mentioned, we work in coalition with other organizations. Jessica and others are hard at work having meetings on Capitol Hill, but elected officials aren't accountable to us. At the end of the day, they're accountable to their constituents. And that's why World Vision donors and advocates like you on this call are really, really critical for the work of advocacy and justice, because we've been given this gift. We really view it as a gift of democracy in our country. Even if that gift appears to be dysfunctional or chaotic at times, which, admittedly can happen and has happened, it only has the hope of working if we use it. And so we talk often, you know, within World Vision about the parable of Matthew 25, that God calls us to steward not only our financial resources for his kingdom work, but everything that he's given us. And our influence and our voice in our democracy is one of those gifts that we can steward. So what does that look like specifically to steward your influence on this issue of trafficking? We believe that it looks like communicating these messages, the things that you just heard from Rasan about what works, the things you heard from Jessica about the importance of certain approaches. We believe that it looks like communicating those messages to our leaders. You know, that we believe the poor are made in God's image and that we want our country to extend a compassionate hand to them and to be good neighbors with the laws that we create. Many of you are on this call are already familiar with the tools that World Vision provides online. For those of you joined by computer, you'll see the website there on the screen, but you can go to worldvisionadvocacy.org. And we have really easy tools that help you communicate these messages via email or phone calls. We provide simple call scripts, so I really encourage you guys to check those out. But we also know that our messages are much more effective when they're communicated in person. And so we want to encourage you on this call today. In fact, we actually need you. We really do need you to meet in person with your members of Congress or their staff in their district office. We know that can sound a little bit intimidating, but we wouldn't ask you to do it unless we knew that it worked and unless we knew for sure that you could do it and be successful at it. We have World Vision donors and advocates actually doing this on an ongoing basis, believe it or not, advocates all around the country meeting in person with members of Congress. And we have really helpful tools to support you, truly, in every single step of the way. We, Cassie and I, host what we call Get Started calls every single Friday, where you have a chance to, you know, those are small, intimate calls for you to connect personally with Cassie and I to talk through what does it look like to schedule a meeting with your member of Congress. How do I get started doing that? What tools do you provide? We have a helpful in-district meeting guide that we provide on our website as well that walks you through what to think about and what to do every single step of the way. We provide a sample meeting agenda worksheet that you can use to help work with us to craft what you're, you know, who should say what in a meeting and how you should pace it out. We offer one-pagers for pretty much every topic, not only this issue of trafficking, but the other issues that are related to the protection of vulnerable children. We have resources that you can use with talking points, and we'll work with you to help determine what would be the most strategic request and angle for your legislators. And we basically provide personal one-on-one support every step of the way. So as you can tell, we really try to make it as easy and painless as possible. Most people who do this discover that it's actually fun and that it really is rewarding when they discover that their legislators and their staff are actually just people too, and they're really open to dialogue and eager to hear from their constituents. August is really a key time for you all to do this because, as has been mentioned, Congress takes a recess in the month of August, so there's just extra time that they're home in their districts and available to meet with advocates just like you. So we're helping advocates around the country schedule meetings right now. So now's the prime time. It's the best time to get on board. You really don't need to be a professional lobbyist to do this. In fact, we're really confident that World Vision donors in particular are positioned to be some of the most effective advocates in the country. I truly believe that because over 90% of Congress actually claims faith in Christ. That means that World Vision donors as people of faith can really engage our leaders with our faith and really speak to their hearts and give them courage and inspiration to keep serving God with the power that he's given them, unlike any other advocates out there. Ultimately, we believe that God is the most effective influencer, way more effective than we ever could be. And so we just want to really empower you as advocates to give God room to work, to not have to feel like you know everything or an expert, but to go in as a person of faith with the goal of just ministering to your leader, to pray for them, and to really inspire them to serve God in this way. So to give you an example of one way, what that can look like, we wanted to highlight really briefly a recent advocate example from Charlotte, North Carolina. So we have Jenny Stevenson on the phone with us, and she recently met with their one of their House representatives to talk about the famine issue that Beth Ann was talking about, to talk about food security. And so, Jenny, if you wouldn't mind, we'd love to just hear from you the creative way that your team tried to speak to the heart of the staffer that you met with. Jenny, are you on the line? Jenny, if you're speaking, we can't hear you. You might still be on mute.
Can you all hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay, great. Hi.
Hi.
Well, as Amanda said, I will say, just first of all, it is so fun, and it's exhilarating and exciting. And as Amanda mentioned, we met with our Congresswoman, Representative Adams, at the beginning of May. And as we were prepping for that meeting, and we began discussing what we wanted to include in our leave behinds in terms of statistics, things we covered in the meeting, I just mentioned to the group a few quotes that I came across by in our research and preparation. From Norman Borlaug, who's an agro-scientist. And Allison Ortliff, one of our co-chairs from last year, remembering from an advocacy training session, the idea of kind of taking the leave behinds a step further, thought, well, how can we use these quotes in a, you know, kind of a different way? And so we started discussing the idea of maybe a pretty card that they could display in their office. And our current co-chair, Vicki Jacobson, we like to say she just went wild with it, and she ran with it, and got putting the quote on a floral stick and sticking it in a pot filled with a wheatgrass plant, and paired that with a freshly baked loaf of bread, which was wonderful, since we found out in our research and our background of Representative Adams that she sits on the House Agriculture Committee, and she's also she's very passionate about hunger issues in the community and the state and globally as well. So issues that we were advocating around as well. It highlighted that we were advocating around FY18 funding for Food for Peace and the Govern Dole Education for All Act, and we felt that they were pleasantly surprised by the gesture. It felt like it was very well received, and if maybe a powerful yet kind of humble way to leave a reminder of our visit and show our appreciation for not only their time but also for what the Adams office has already done to support Global Hunger Initiative.
Thank you, Jenny. I love that so much. I just think, I don't know, for all of you on the call, I if you can see it on the computer, we have a picture of them, but I think having a pot of wheatgrass or being able to eat some bread is actually potentially more influential to communicate a message to your heart as how important food is than a leave behind with a bunch of talking points with people who get a zillion of those handouts from other advocates every day. So we are so proud of you guys, and just thank you for sharing that example of just how easy it can be. We just want to encourage you all, if you're new to this, it is possible, and it really is the most effective thing you can do is to be yourself, to be a person of, you know, of joy, a person of faith, who really can be a passionate advocate for the poor, and that is what is contagious and influential. So as we close our call, you'll see, for those of you on the computer, on the last slide, we just want to let you guys know to be on the lookout for a recording. We'll be sending an email out with a recording of this call. Feel free to share that with those in your network who care about this issue if you find it helpful. You can also go to our website if you'd like monthly or even weekly updates on this, you know, what World Vision is doing in terms of advocacy with Congress around this issue of trafficking, but also other issues that impact child vulnerability. Feel free, please, we invite you to sign up for those. And you can also email us with direct questions, as I mentioned. We really are here to engage with you. We really see this as a relationship and a partnership. We're so grateful for you. And as you continue with your day, I would just love to be able to pray for you all. So if you're in a place where you can, I would just invite us to close in prayer. Father, I thank you so much for this time, the gift that it is to be able to gather together around the country from all over through the phone, and just what a gift it is to be a part of the World Vision community. I'm so thankful for, and convicted even, encouraged by the passion of every person who joined this call. Lord, we long to be more committed to the causes that you care about, and not just the causes, but the people that they impact, Lord. Thank you for teaching us through the poor. Thank you for leading us with a lamb. We just recognize that you are a God of the weak, and we want to be where you are. And so we just pray that you would empower each person on this call and those in their networks, those in their churches, to act by giving compassionately, but also by using their voice. We pray that you would give them the courage and the favor to influence their elected officials, so that we can, so that our laws and our country can reflect your redemption of this world, so that we can truly be salt and light in the midst of things that are very dark. We pray that our laws in this country, the establishment of them, would be a shining light on that darkness by naming it and by holding perpetrators accountable and by directing funds to prevent it in the first place. So God, we give our efforts to you. We pray that you would fill us, and we just thank you for the gift of this time. Ask these things in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
Well, thank you all for joining. We look forward to engaging with you over email and the phone after this, and we'll be looking to hold another call on a different issue in the months ahead. So thanks so much for joining. We'll be in touch.